This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. And I want to again welcome all of you pod cadets for tuning in and for listening this week again to another fine episode of The Magic Word. We appreciate you coming in from week to week, but we also appreciate those people who spend their time behind the microphone with the conversations we have. You know, again, what this is intended to be really is just an opportunity for me to be able to talk with a lot of friends and then to have the microphone on and let you, the listener, kind of feel as if it's your eavesdropping on the conversation. I love you eavesdropping on my conversations because there are a lot of really good things that we have really to talk about and to offer. You know, this kind of stems back way back when I was many years ago with Simon Lovell, and we were having a beer at a bar, believe it or not. After about a couple of hours, he said, you know, I think this would be something I think people would be interested in hearing. This would be a great lecture if they were just sitting here listening to the conversations we were having. And that got me to thinking about, yeah, it's a good idea. You know, if there were people who were listening to conversations, a lot of times the things I get into with my friends are things that are a little bit deeper, more theoretical, and having to do with a lot of things that you might find of interest. And that's what I'm hoping that you'll find again here this week with my guest. Scott Alexander has been touring across the country. Actually, he's finished touring across the country with his lecture, and he had over 30 cities from coast to coast and border to border. I mean, he was really traveling around a lot, maybe 10,000 miles in total. I don't know. But over the course of about 45 days or so. Anyhow, he had a lot to say, and his lecture was very well received. Everybody said it was one of the better lectures that they have seen in a long time. He has a lot of interesting products that are out there, and also a lot of really good information to share. And he's a very funny guy, and he is going to be featured at Abbott's get-together this summer. So if you are going to be going there, if you're not, now is probably a good time for you to go ahead and register for Abbott's get-together. It's going to have an overlap, unfortunately, with Magic Live. I mean, I think that it is over on, I think it begins on a Wednesday. I've forgotten. Anyhow, there is a day in which that there's actually an overlap. So some people who may be attending one or the other, or if they're attending, they're going to attend actually one or the other. If you attend both, you're going to miss one day of one or the other because you just can't be in two places at the same time, even though you are a magician. Or we all are all magicians. We all are all magicians. I started to sound kind of Texan, didn't it? We all, like you all. Anyhow, Scott Alexander's got a lot to talk about and some information I'm sure that you're going to enjoy. And if you didn't get a chance to hear the lecture or to see it when he was in or near your city, he is offering a set of his lecture notes. Or if you were at the lecture and didn't get a set of his notes while he was there, then you can enter the contest so this way that you can be sent a copy of his notes. More about that on the back end of this podcast. So let me just kind of step out of the way and introduce my guest here this week, my friend and yours, Mr. Scott Alexander, here on The Magic Word. Good morning, Vietnam. This is Scott Wells and
Scott Alexander.
And we are
Two Scotts in the Morning.
Brought to you by Quadruple A Auto. In case that you have any fender benders, tire slips, or nip slips, we can handle it all. Remember that the A stands for quality. Anyhow.
Thanks for joining us on KMAGIC Radio.
Oh, how I wish my voice would sound and feel better.
It sounds a lot better.
It does today than it did yesterday. I do feel better about this. For those who are listening and know my voice regularly, this is not my normal timbre, but I am certainly getting better. And thank you guys who have written and asked about this. But just a little bit of strep throat, and that was more than just laryngitis. So nevertheless, I am feeling, a lot better thanks to the medication.
And I'm wearing one of those Chinese masks they wear over their face on the plane, just in case.
Yes. I thought that was a condom.
I'm sorry.
That you had pulled down over your head, that little neck thing you had there.
Yep.
Anyhow, I am so pleased to sit and chat with Scott Alexander because I love you and everything that you've done and
thanks.
That I've been a fan. You know, a lot of times people don't recognize about what kind of impact others have in their lives, and you have in mine, over the years. I think one of the first videos I got was a DVD of yours. It was the one that predated the Smash and Stab.
Yep, it was either the 10 o'clock or the Midnight Show.
Midnight Show, yeah. That was it. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thanks. That was a great DVD.
And yeah, that was kind of my first launch into the magic producing genre. Yeah.
And I thought, you know, who's Scott Alexander? You
yeah,
know,
exactly. That's what it said on the back of the DVD. Who the hell is Scott Alexander?
Now we all know. That's right. And you continue to be doing just a whole lot of stuff. And you've been aligned with Penguin for such a long time. And that's one of the things that I just think is super, the way that you and Dan Harlan have taken the Christmas show to something, you know, completely different level. It's just been...
Yeah, well, I've known Dan since way, way back. And yeah, in fact, we started that back in the day, caused a little stir with that Mad Joke magazine.
Yes.
So we just like, you know, if you can't laugh at yourself, as Harry Anderson said, then you don't know what you look like sleeping.
That's another way of putting it. I've never heard that.
In fact, I made a parody of Cartoon. That was kind of the first thing, because Cartoon 2 had come out. And I'd never met Dan, and I got the job in Vegas, and I moved out there, and Dan was living there, and I ran into him. And I said, hey, I want to show you this. This is funny. And I said, I always had this thought of doing a magazine. And so he was like, this is great. Let's do it. So we did that. And then we just kind of carried on the live version of that magazine. I guess it's our version of Magic Live, doing the Penguin.
Funny thing, Christmas, you know, I've got a copy of my joke on my coffee table.
Oh, yeah.
A matter of fact, that had I not been ill and you would have been staying in my house, it's actually in my guest room right there, that you would have seen that. I'd forgotten that you were involved with that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was the guy who came up with the idea and went to Dan, and Dan did all the artwork and the layout, and then we sat around and wrote and put that whole thing together. You know, it's you know, and it was of course based on Harry Anderson's version originally, called Weenie.
Weenie, right? Exactly. Weenie was very funny,
it was
a joke on Genie magazine, as my joke was on Magic magazine.
Yep.
Which one of the reasons I got it out was because I'm in there. I was a convention editor, and in reading through that was so funny, and it resonated with a lot of people, particularly for me, because I know how much time was taken to write, and for someone to have been familiar with all the columns to write so edgily, is that a word?
We were intent on being spot on exact copy of Magic magazine. In fact, Dan did a little Navy SEAL job on Stan Allen, because Dan was doing something, an ad in the magazine at the time, running an ad, and Dan said to Stan, hey, you know what? I'd like to lay out the ad myself. So would you mind giving me your fonts that you use for Magic magazine so I can lay out my ad for Magic magazine?
Oh, boy. And he did?
And Stan said, oh, sure. So Stan gave him the fonts. So that's how we were able to copy it exactly and make it look like Magic magazine.
What was his thought after it came out? Was he first upset and then kind of accepted it, or was he flattered, or what?
Stan, I didn't
What's the official comment?
It's official comment. Yeah, I didn't really actually talk to Stan about it. I know some people with fragile egos were a little ticked off, but that's the whole point. We have
that's
to
right.
laugh at
hey,
ourselves.
Take it, roll with it.
But everybody, all the people in the trenches, the rank and file magicians were just, and that's who it was for anyway. We just loved it. But I remember the only thing Stan said to me was that John Mooring came into the production meeting for the April issue of Magic magazine, which would have been coming out over the next couple of weeks, and took Mad Joke and threw it on the table and said, well, our job is done. So that was hilarious. That was what he related to me. So he didn't say positive or negative, but you got to be flattered when someone takes that much effort to parody, you know, what you do.
It was a lot of effort. I mean, that obviously was a one-off kind of thing, just as Weenie was.
Yeah.
It must have taken a year or so to
It took about 8 to 10 weeks to 10 weeks? Together.
Yeah. Is that right?
Dan and I work really well together. We both understand each other and
compliment each other's humor pretty
each
well.
Other. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's why we've gotten so much good response on the Penguin Christmas things that we did over the past 6 years.
It looks like that obviously everything, or most of the things that I see on the Penguin Christmas thing are scripted, but I can tell when there are a few things that seem to be off the cuff that you kind of add that's fresh. It happens to be based upon maybe something that one of the other guys said, and so you respond to that. So you're very much in the moment.
Yeah, it is scripted and rehearsed, but then there's that, because there's a live audience, we have the opportunity to improv and add on to jokes and do things that happen live in the moment. That's what's great about it. It's a live in front of a live audience.
Sure.
For video. So,
yeah. And I think that's what makes it's like a comedy club. You it know, is. When you're kind it's of sitting just, in front of that group.
That same feeling of a comedy club in that Penguin studio there right. in Ohio.
Yeah. Right. Now, that's the same studio, obviously, where they shoot all the videos and everything then mm-hmm. as well. Is that right?
Yep. That's their main production hub. They've got all the equipment there to shoot the videos. It's really nice, great cameras mm-hmm. and a great crew. It's just set up really well.
Yeah.
And that's why they've been so successful with all the download stuff, because you know, that's what that's where we're moving now in Magic.
There's no question of that. You know, I really like the idea that they have that, you know, you can have a card basically with a scratch off with a password, and that you can that yeah. way you don't have to carry around a yeah. bunch of DVDs. You just have a card, yeah. you know, and they can go and yeah. download it that way or buy it on yeah. the spot.
It's a double-edged sword, though. I remember my, you know, Denny Haney, who was my mentor in Magic, mm-hmm. who we just lost back in January of 2019, said that, you know, that's great. You know, downloads are fine, but, it, you know, you don't really own anything. If anything happens to your computer or whatever, poof, it's gone. There's nothing like owning a physical book where you can hold it and own it and learn it and smell it.
Smell
and,
it. No, you
know,
I agree.
So, yeah. But so it's a double-edged sword. I think the internet's downloads and stuff are helpful, but, you know, they can also be, you know, very ephemeral. And
I love my library. You know, I've got a small library compared with a lot of magicians I have. I learned a long time ago from Jay Marshall to keep a bibliography. So I have a file of every book and everything about it. So I know I've got just shy of 1,000 books in my library then right now, but yeah. I'd love to go and pick things off the shelf because I have a lot of things bookmarked that I remember that I like.
Yeah.
And I know exactly where they are in the shelf. And whenever I've gotten much more selective in buying books here of late. In fact, the most recent one probably was the Johnny Thompson books.
That thing was great.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you have to be selective. You know, I of course love Juan Tamaras, but the Rainbow book, it's like, I love what I said Juan has to say and to teach. However, that from what I'd heard, this is a little bit more difficult reading.
Kind of like Fitzky or Showmanship for Magicians. I talked about that last night, yeah.
Fitzky's another one that I recommend. You know, when people talk about trying to learn magic, you know, I've copied a couple of pages, you know, out mm-hmm. of Fitzky, and I've said that these are some important things that you need to learn whenever you're putting your show together and an act yeah. or a routine or whatever, you know, that are very important points to hit.
Yeah. I thought about, I think I said it in the lecture last night, I thought about doing an audio reading of Fitzky, the trilogy, you know, because when you sit down to read the thing, it's like, oh my God, this is so drudgery. But, you know, doing an audio book of it so people would actually be able to listen to it in their car while they're driving and yeah. not have to,
right.
to read it.
Well, who was it? Was it Dan Harlan, actually? No. R. Paul Williams?
R. Paul Wilson?
Wilson, I think, put together the Tarbell book, didn't he? Or who?
Royal Road. R. Paul Wilson did Royal Road Card Magic.
That's right.
And Dan Harlan, God bless his soul, he went through and did every trick in Tarbell.
That's what I was thinking. Video. He did Tarbell.
Yep, every yeah. trick, and he reimagined it, and he modernized it. I'm talking every.
Yeah, because I know they have like Clark Gable, you know, yeah, different yeah. things like they'd have to update.
Yeah,
like,
and
so
they had
things.
Like a minstrel like performer yes. that he changed from blackface to the Joker and wrote a Batman premise for that whole
awesome.
Thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, just really updated it, changed references to Queen Victoria, to Lady Gaga, you know, just mm-hmm. all that stuff, modernized it. The Tarbell course is really it's the meat and potatoes of magic. Everything is in there.
That was one of my first books yeah. That I bought. In fact, I told the story before in the podcast that I have, with the first money I got from a birthday party, I didn't know how much to charge. And so I said, well, how much was Tarbell? And I think the first volume was, I want to say like $12 at the time. Mm-hmm. And then the next one was $15. So I felt like I had some experience. And so then the next few that I fit, and then the last one was like $18 or $20. So I felt like, okay, I'm good enough. I could charge $20 now for
yeah,
the show.
Yeah, so your fees went up with your purchasing
that's right.
power.
That's right, my purchasing power.
Yeah, you can't be afraid to raise your
that
fees.
Was my first foundation of my library. Yeah. What was an important book to you?
Royal Road was my first
That's
book.
That's great. Yeah, no yeah. question about that.
And Tarbell, of course. In fact, 80% of Lance Burton's Las Vegas show you could find in Tarbell that he did for 10 years. 80% of it mm-hmm. you could find in there related. But yeah, Royal Road was my first book, the first real magic book that I got and devoured. I loved that. And that, too, was hard to read as a, you know, 12-year-old.
As a child, sure. Yeah, that's true. You got to keep focused on that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, as I think that Erdnase was. You know, I can't imagine a 12-year-old really getting into Erdnase beyond
the
first chapter.
Vernon did when he was a kid. He ate that thing up and look what good it did him.
Yeah, exactly. He's still dead.
I know, still dead.
But anyhow, going back to, then to Penguin, that they do have a lot of good lectures, and that not only that, I like, again, the format, the way they do that with the cards.
Yeah.
I did a lecture with Murphy's at the table, and I'm proud of the way that it turned out. It was about 3.5 hours, and I still felt like afterwards, oh, I forgot to add this or that.
You right.
know? So there are always a few more things, you know, that are on there. But the point is that with that the table, through them, that you still have to order and buy online or have the physical DVD. So if I'm at a lecture, I can't just sell the card like the Penguin does. You know what I'm saying? Is the business right. card's got the password scratch off thing.
Right.
That you can have it immediately as a yep. download, as opposed to saying, if yeah. they pay for a download, I'll have to send it to you when I get home or something.
Right.
You
we know? Want, we, our culture has shifted to immediate gratification.
It has.
We want it, we need it, we got to have it now.
Yeah.
Thanks to Jeff Bezos and Amazon and all that. You know, we just like, boom.
Speaking of which, this past weekend that I was at the 4F convention, and one of the people who was there, actually two of the people who were there, were with a company called Magic Flicks, I believe it's called.
Magic Flicks.
Flicks, yeah. It's supposed to be like Netflix.
Oh, that's the magic. Netflix of magic thing,
have
right?
Have you heard about this at all?
I heard rumblings of it a couple of months ago, but yeah.
yeah.
What's the deal?
Essentially, they're going to be having live streaming of ongoing magic things that are not just tutorials, but actual some teaching of tricks, and also mm. shows, and whatever is going to be available, I guess, in the to the general public, that they'll be, I mean, for public consumption, that they don't have to pay the rights to or whatever,
mm.
That they're going to be broadcasting, plus other original things that'll be posted.
Yeah.
But their whole concept is to have this, as I understand it, as the Netflix of magic, basically, mm-hmm. so that you subscribe to this, and then I can, instead of, or I can stream and watch it all day long, or I can say, hey, I want to watch Scott Alexander's lecture, you mm-hmm. know, right now. And just like, you know, Netflix, you want to watch, you know, some movie or whatever it is at the time.
Right.
And then same thing here. You can watch this, then you can it belongs to you for that content, as long as you keep your monthly subscription up like
right,
that.
Right.
The point is, of immediate gratification,
yeah.
of, you know, I don't want to wait until this comes back around on Penn and Teller for a repeat and to yeah. see who, when this guy was on. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah. That's the model we're moving towards, nowadays. You know, we just, boom, we want it, we get it, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's true. You know, it's kind of funny that, which is another thing, you know, that is in, Carissa Hendricks' lecture, and she does as part of her, character as Lucy Darling, mm-hmm. where she talks about ordering something from Amazon. Of course, now we have next day delivery. It's amazing with Prime.
Yeah.
And talking about delivery with drones and that kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And she had like an empty bag, you know, and then she had someone name a book and they named Harry Potter, you know, and then boom, all of a sudden the bag pops open and she pulls out this 3-inch book of Harry Potter, you know, from the bag. Inside the bag.
So like the dream bag kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's great. Yeah. She's terrific. I listened to her podcast, her and Kayla Drescher.
Yep.
It's great. You know, that's, I haven't seen her show yet, but, I like the thoughts. Sometimes they tend to use feminism as a club to wield against, mm-hmm. the evil male magicians, which is fine, but they're starting conversations, which need to be started. And I think that's terrific. Yeah.
No, I agree. And as I told her, I really feel that within 10 years, for sure, maybe 5 years, I'm optimistic that we're not going to be referring to female magicians, that we'll all be magicians,
yeah.
you know, basically.
I've been saying, I said 10 years ago, I said the next thing that's going to be popular on television, you know, after Chris Angel, David Blaine, is going to be a really prominent a female magician. That's the next thing.
I think you're right.
That's where we're going.
I think we need that.
And I've said within our lifetime, we're going to see that. That's going to happen, because there's so many women getting into magic, you know, now.
There are.
Yeah.
And
that's great, because, I mean, magic has been, you know, male dominated for, you know, the past 4,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there have been women, but, and that's the whole thing that goes to Max Maven, where he says that, you know, young boys get into this as a social coping mechanism, right?
Right.
And it's true. It's true. Boys and girls are different and they're raised differently.
Mm-hmm.
And, if you're a boy, you get into magic because you see other magicians and there aren't really a lot of examples of female magicians out there for little young girls to latch onto.
That's right.
If you can't see it, you can't be it. Right?
They don't have role models.
And that's
point.
What's great about Carissa mm-hmm. and Kayla and all these folks coming in.
Yep.
And also, too, boys, the reason I think we don't see more women in magic is that boys tend to latch onto magic as a young age as that social coping mechanism, like Max Maven says. And then that kind of becomes their identity. Like, they're the kid, they're the magic kid, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then later on, so they don't really, if they feel awkward in a social situation, they'll whip out a deck of cards and boom, now all of a sudden they're the life of the party and woohoo!
Yeah.
And that gives them a certain reinforcement of, wow, this is great. So, but girls, the reason girls don't do it is because girls actually mature faster than little boys.
Good point.
Right?
Yeah.
They're better with social skills. They have more empathy naturally as women. They can relate and talk and feel more comfortable in social situations. They have those soft skills as well. Plus, you combine that with the fact that there's not enough women as examples of magicians. So it's just a self-perpetuating thing. But it can be dangerous for boys, too, because if your whole identity becomes magic, mm-hmm. and you do that as a career later in life, then your career gets wrapped up in your identity gets wrapped up in your career. And then if anything negative happens with your career, like you don't get that gig, or you feel that you failed in front of an audience or something, then that can lead to depression, and that can lead to anxiety, that can lead to alcoholism, that can lead to
suicidal tendencies.
Suicide. We've seen it, you know, over the past 10 years.
Unfortunately,
so
yeah.
It's important to have other things besides magic, you know, don't wrap that magic up in your identity too much. So hopefully that'll just you have to be aware.
Well, you know, that's great advice. And I've heard other magicians who have espoused that same thing. It's important that you have interests outside of magic. I don't care whether it's going to be golf or sports or whatever it might happen to be,
or volunteering at the church down the street to do something.
Exactly. Helping other people, And that's one of the things, I think one of the reasons you get into magic is not only to get over social awkwardness for some people, but also because of your philanthropic spirit, you're more altruistic.
We like giving people the wow, right? We like giving people the wow. That's a gift. You know, wow,
that's what we want.
Moment. Yeah.
That's what we want.
Yeah.
I think it's that we're living for the applause. And so you can get that same kind of feeling through giving to other people, as you say, whether it's Meals on Wheels or helping, going to the hospital to visit, maybe even doing magic in the hospital.
That whole mutual gratification thing, the giving someone the wow and you getting the knowledge of, wow, I made that person's day, is the same thing as going down to Meals on Wheels and delivering something to a senior citizen, seeing their eyes light up, and then you go, wow, I did something really good.
It's just
good for your soul.
Made a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure that you've had from time to time some people have come to you and said, hey, I got started in magic because of something I saw you do or perform.
That's so awesome. I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that. And I'm starting to hear that a lot more now. Because I remember, talking to my heroes and going, I started doing this because of you, or you were this influence on me. And to be able to have a little bit of that now is like, oh, man, I'm actually making a little bit of an impact here. That feels really good.
Yeah. That's good. Well, We don't know what kind of ripples that we cause when you throw that idea out in the pond, that it might, hit wherever, literally in the world, the way that it is with social media.
Yeah, it can go all the way to Indonesia in 2 seconds and you can influence somebody. In fact, I met a guy at Denny's Magic Shop a couple of months ago, and he said, I'm from Indonesia and I'm a big fan and I do this, and he in detail described the routine and what he did, and I'm like, oh my god, this is just unbelievable that it's having that widespread a reach. It's just cool. It's really cool.
That is very cool.
Yeah.
Well, you broached a subject about Denny Haney, and I did. It's one of the things I want to kind of circle back to.
Oh yeah.
Is your closeness to him, because I know that you didn't live that far away from where he was then in Baltimore.
Yeah.
Then as well, because you're in Pennsylvania, and you were a teen when you first met him.
I met him for the very first time. My first mentor, who was Raymond Corbin, he's in the book Ghost Masters.
I've seen the poster.
Yeah, he was one of those guys who went around the 40s
and 50s. Yeah,
doing the ghost shows, the spook shows. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so he was doing a show, and Denny was driving back from a show and came to see Raymond. And Raymond, my first mentor, introduced me to Denny. And I was probably about 14 at the time. And I'm looking at Denny going, I know this guy. Where do I know this guy from?
Yeah.
Well, it turns out when I was 10, my parents wanted a magician for their birthday party. For my birthday party. And they looked up in the phone book for magicians. Denny's was the only name listed in Baltimore, where I grew up.
Yeah.
So they called Denny, and his rates were super expensive at the time because he had just been doing colleges. But he couldn't do the show. But 2 weeks later, in the mail, I got an 8x10 of Denny and Lee show. Denny's holding his sword in his John Travolta looking outfit with smoke, and it's signed to Scott. I hope you have a happy birthday. Sorry I couldn't be there.
Wow.
And I put that on my wall when I was 10. I was like, that's really cool.
Yeah.
So 4 years later, I'm going, that's the guy
That's
I
why
got
you
the
recognize
picture
him.
from. So, and I have a deep connection to Denny. I was born when I 1970 in the apartments across the street from where Denny would eventually open his first magic shop. So very, very entwined with him. And then I Alain New was his road manager for a while. I took over for Alain New while I was in college, and he left to go pursue his own career. And then Puck took over for me when I left to pursue my career. So we all worked with Denny as road managers and on his show doing onstage assistant stuff, and just being able to hang out with him for you know, 30 years.
You're talking about like the college circuit when he
was
in
the college circuit. Yeah. He was doing corporates by the time I had got there.
Okay.
He had stopped doing the colleges, but he was the king of the corporate events in the late 80s and early 90s.
You know, I had had many conversations with him and his shop with his pig way back when. And I remember one of the things that he told me about working the college circuit, and that was that he gave up too soon. He said, I really felt that that I had gotten everything there is out of it. I finished on the top, and it's time to open up a magic shop because that's the future.
right.
The brick and mortar magic shops. You know?
Yeah, he opened that shop to help people, not to make money.
Yeah.
And it broke.
And to keep it as a real magic shop and not as an adult novelty place, too.
Exactly. No dog poop, no rubber chickens, no fake vomit.
Right.
And it was a real, real magic shop with none of that. Most of those places do survive on costumes during those 3 months. I've worked in several magic shops and over my young days. And so he wanted it to be a real studio. That's why he called it a studio, the Denny Lee Magic Studio. He had a theater back there, and you could go and do shows and watch shows and lectures. And I've been working on a book about Denny for the past 5 years. Mm-hmm. I've got hours and hours and hours of audio of him and video of him talking about his theories on the subtrunk, theories on the three gaspers of magic, theories on, everything, how to buy magic, how to read magic books, and all of his act in every detail. So it's going to be like on the scope of a mini Johnny Thompson book, kind of covering a wide gamut of stuff. So that'll be out in the next year.
It's not going to be just about tricks. It's also going to be about his career and
career, a biography about the stand-up magic he contributed, and about the illusions that he also contributed.
I understand that he served in Vietnam, and I believe that's where he met his first wife, Lee.
His first wife, Lee. Yeah, he served in Vietnam. He went back and did three tours of duty. After the first one, he loved it so much. Yeah, he really, he was an interpreter.
Was he? He spoke Vietnamese?
Spoke North Vietnamese.
Okay.
Yeah, when he went to Monterey, California to get assigned which language he was going to start learning.
Yeah.
He had NV and everybody else had SV because he was more adept over those tests. So North Vietnamese, and he's like, isn't that the enemy?
Yeah, those are the bad guys.
Yeah. So he learned to speak North Vietnamese, and his job was to run around the fields in front of the special forces with this big radio pack and tap into phone lines and listen to conversations of the enemy. So he's running out there with this big giant antenna flipping around on his back saying,
hey, I'm here.
Shoot me.
So, oh, my.
Yeah, that was his main job when he first got in there, yeah.
Yeah. And so he and Lee were married for how many years?
They were married for about, I believe about 10-ish years. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And then that just kind of, he told me that Lee, just kind of his fees started going up.
Yeah.
And Lee was very, very uncomfortable about making that much money. And so had some kind of self-confidence issues. And then after they had two kids and so the marriage just kind of fell apart. Denny's very independent.
Yes,
he was a very, opinionated guy. So that kind of dissolved. And then Denny found another Vietnamese girl named Min. And they just clicked. And they never had a romantic relationship. But on stage, they were like Abbott and Costello, George and Gracie. It was terrific. And
so they talked on stage.
They talked on stage.
Because his first wife, Lee, didn't talk.
No, it was a flash act. It was he did Doves of the Air and all that kind of thing. And then the illusions. But when Min came in, it really brought the comedy into Denny's show. And Min brought the comedy out of Denny. And in van rides, they would drive to gigs and talk about, hey, Denny, why don't we try this? I drop this and you come and pick this up. And it just evolved into what the Denny and Lee show eventually became, that partnership. Really.
And he kept her name as being Lee.
He kept her name as
being just for the
Lee.
Brand identification.
He tried changing his name at one time to Denny Lee. And that was they already knew him as Denny Lee. So they just kept the name, the Denny and Lee show.
Yeah.
And left it kind of ambiguous as to her, because he would call her Min on stage. So.
And so they were together for a number of years, and they got divorced. So it was just the two wives, I guess, he'd had?
No, that wasn't his wife. They weren't romantically
involved. Oh, they were just
partners.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah,
so he never remarried?
Never remarried. Okay. He said, nope, I'm done. That's it. I got married. Now I'm done. So
done it.
Okay. Been there, done that. Yeah. So yeah, and then Min was just his assistant. And so the great thing is that at Abbott's coming up, we're going to Alan New, me and Puck are going to perform the first half of the closing night show, and the second half we're going to recreate the Denny and Lee show with Min helping. Wow. Okay. So, and then Denny will be buried in Colon, Michigan. He was cremated, and we're taking him out there. We got a place for him right next to Don Allen, and
oh,
he's going
great.
To spend his eternal days there next to Don and all the fellas out there in Colon.
Wow. Yep. That's going to be happening this year.
This year.
And that's going to be August, I want
to
say the
7 10? To 10.
7 to 10, 10. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Falls right after Magic Line. I think Magic Line is 4 to 7, and this is 7 to 10.
Yeah,
so.
It's going to be a blast
yep.
this year.
Yep. Yeah. It sounds like it's going to be really good. I'd like to go to both. They weren't so darn close. And speaking of that, I was thinking about the kind, I'd done a show, Now You See It with Scott Wells. I don't know if you saw the video that I did with him. I occasionally do these things at conventions where I host like a TV talk show
kind
of a thing.
Yeah, I did.
And
see
so I have
that,
guests
yeah.
that come in, and I had Denny as one of my guests, and that he was talking about all this, but he also had a video that he had done that I don't know if it's his daughter or granddaughter. Who
oh, his daughter, yeah.
His daughter.
Who directed it.
You want to talk about that?
Yeah, yeah. It was.
Because he was very proud of her.
Yeah, Dawn. And Dawn is just a sweetheart. She's wonderful. Denny had two kids. Dawn and Denny Jr. And they're both just wonderful people. And she directed this movie and Denny was an actor in the movie. Mm-hmm. And he was really good as an actor and he was very creepy. It's online. I'll have to, we'll put the link to where you can find it in the podcast notes. But in fact, so much so that Bob Fitch said to Denny after watching that, Bob Fitch said, Denny, close this magic shop, get in your car and drive to L.A. and become a character actor.
Really?
Yes.
That is
yeah,
really
coming
something from
Bob Fitch.
Fitch.
Yeah. But, of course, Denny's stubborn and he loved the shop, so he just stayed there.
Yeah. yeah. You know, I know he feels as if he'd made some mistakes in life, and one of them may have been opening a shop in Las Vegas and expanding.
Oh, yeah. He always, regretted... Well, he was all gangbusters about opening the shop in Las Vegas, and I opened it for him, and we ran it for several years. But he just didn't get the support from the Las Vegas magicians that he thought he would get, and most because, most of them out there are already have their act set. It's they're not coming into it to buy new magic. They might go buy a silk or some flash paper, but it's not really enough to sustain a real magic shop out there. Now, when the guy bought Denny out, who now operates the shop out there, John, I think John McClenahan.
It's correct, John.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so now he's got put a bunch of money into it, and it's kind of, I'm going to be doing a lecture there pretty soon. So I like the fact that it's still there, because those days when I was running it and my wife, Jenny, who's also a magician, it was really the cool place to hang in Vegas like 2000. And
there were a lot of people who just kind of came and went all the time there.
All the time.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
You would see Teller would walk in, Siegfried and Roy, Michael Jackson came in and hung out at the shop for like 3 days in a row. Muhammad Ali. It was just a really cool place, like for those 5 years that Jenny and I were there. It was really awesome. And hopefully it'll come back around to that.
I remember that Scott Brown then, I guess, took over after you did then as the general manager?
Yeah. Scott Brown went and ran it. And Denny, because I went out and started doing more ships and more other stuff. Started my family and... Yep.
I was going to get to that also, talking about ships, because I know that you have worked a lot with that. And... did you stop working ships because of your commitment to the family and kind of felt like you're lonesome and wanted to be with your wife and kids, or what?
Well, I worked in Vegas with my wife. We both did a show together. At one point, she had her own show at one end of the strip, and I had a show at the other end of the strip.
What kind of show did she have?
Oh, she was my assistant in the Illusion show as well.
Yeah.
We were more partners than assistants. In fact, Jenny started doing magic on stage at Caesar's Magical Empire, then you saw other women as assistants, like doing magic in one pieces in the show. Mm-hmm. So I think she was responsible for a little bit of that move
cool.
we're seeing, which
yeah.
is kind of cool. She worked downtown at the Plaza. She did first an ensemble show and then her own show at the Plaza called Le Cabaret was the one version of it. And then I forget what the other title was, but she headlined that show and did Illusions. She did the Crystal Lightning Chamber and the Subtrunk and Razor Blades, Snowstorm.
Kind of like a Melinda show.
linking rings, kind of like a Melinda show. Yeah, yeah. Fire eating. Yeah. So it was cool. And then we worked together as well for 7 years at Caesars doing Illusions. And I was kind of, I got really lucky to get that gig. It happened amazingly. And
how did that happen? Some people don't know about Caesars, because that was the Caesars Magical Empire was supposedly something that was kind of underground, I guess, that was found, or when they dug and unearthed something, I think that was.
Yeah, it was all set up like unearthed this Roman ruins underneath it. Caesars Palace.
Yeah.
And it was like this whole thing. Yeah, I can talk about that. I was made my way out to Vegas for the very first time, and was looking around, and I was decided to walk around the strip and see all the magic stuff. So I did that, and I wandered into Caesar's Magical Empire. Yeah. Like, I saw somebody was coming out of the back door. It said exit only, and I just was like, I'll just walk in there. So I walked in.
Nobody stopped me.
Yeah, that person turned out to be Mike Abston, who worked for Magic Mega Masters for years, and he ran the magic shop there. So I walked in, and the first person I bump into is Jeff McBride.
Yeah.
And I think I met him at a lecture once, but I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I said, I'm a magician I live in Florida now. How do you get to work here? And Jeff put me in touch with his manager, who put me in touch with the people who book Caesars.
Tobias Beckworth.
Tobias, yep. Yeah. And so I took Tobias to lunch, asked him about it. He gave me the information to the people who book it. I set up a meeting with them. They said, we love your videotape. It's great. We need somebody as a fill-in act. But we just can't hire. We need to see you live. Are you working anywhere in LA? And I said, well, you know what? I think I might have a date at the Magic Castle. Let me get back to you.
Yeah.
So I went to the castle. I said, hey, I got a chance to audition for Caesar's Palace. Yeah. Is there anywhere I can work in here? And one of the hosts was so nice. He said, I'll give you the museum room downstairs if they're coming in. You can mm-hmm. do a show down there. I'll make an announcement. So I invited the booker. And this is the lady who booked David Copperfield in the Circus Maximus. Like,
wow.
This was the big
– way back. Okay.
Yeah, Linda Crane, big booker, and her VP. Uh-huh. They came into the castle. He made an announcement. Scott Grocki at the time, which was my real name is Grocki, but there's a whole nother story about how I got Alexander, but so they made an announcement.
Alexander's great.
I love it. They came downstairs, watched me perform live. They were like, you're hired. It's great. Can you be in Vegas in 2 weeks? We're going to hire you for a month to fill in for Michael Lamar and Daryl doing mm-hmm. close up in the parlor, and the Pendragons, doing for 1 day a week, in the stage. And because I was a general practitioner, I did close up
and illusions.
That's how I was able to get that gig through making that gig happen to perform for them live.
That is some good advice to make sure that people know there should be general practitioners, not necessarily focus on just one thing. You know?
Yeah. It's hard though, because Johnny Thompson knew everything about everything.
Mm, that's the truth.
And so that, I like to think of myself secretly as the Johnny Thompson of my price range I think studying all those different things inform you about other things, because there's stuff that illusions can tell you about close-up, mm-hmm. and there's also stuff that close-up can tell you about illusions. Shin Lim's basically doing an illusion show on a table.
That's a good point.
You know?
Absolutely.
So, mm-hmm. yeah, I think being interdisciplined like that really helps.
So, what happened then with Caesars? I knew that ran for a long number of years.
Yep. Every 2 weeks.
And Milt Larson was the one who came and actually pitched that to them and built
Milt
it
Larson, and he was buddies with the president of Caesars Palace at the
that
time.
Was it.
And
yeah.
They concocted this idea, and it ran. It was supposed to run, they said they were going to, once they got it built and spent $60 million on it, they were like, we're going to close this, we're going to do something else with it. Every like 3 months, they were like, we're going to close it. And it ended up running for like 7 years.
That's what I thought, about 7 years.
Yep. And I worked there almost all of that 7 years. I got there really, really early. I think maybe after the first 6 months it was open. And they were changing the format at that time. Mm-hmm. And then eventually after we did the fill-in gig for the Pendray, and we were really green when we got there. We had just come out of performing colleges and we didn't really have that Vegas thing. But over those 4 weeks, we talked to the technicians, we talked to the other people, and they said, you need to do this, change this. And we immediately just adapted and were tenacious about, all right, let's get this illusion. Let's take this out. Let's pull this in. And we were making the money then now that we could afford to do that
right. And
really on the fly get an illusion built. And just got better and better. And that they said, you know what? Okay, can you come back next month and fill in for the Majestics and for, mm-hmm. whoever. And then that 1 week they hired us to perform for, which we packed up all our stuff and moved to Vegas for and turned into that 7-year gig just by staying tenacious and changing our act and always being willing to adapt.
Just so the people have an idea about how large of an area that was, as I understand, when they remodeled that is now the Celine Dion auditorium that seats
about half of it is Celine Dion's theater now. Yeah. Celine Dion was the death knell to the Caesar's Magical Empire.
Really?
Yep. She was the one who.
What happened?
Finally, the president of Caesar's Palace had left, the guy who conceptualized it.
Okay.
And of course, when the new person comes in, they have new ideas.
New ideas, sure.
So they wanted Celine Dion to be in, and Celine needed a bigger dressing room, you know, of course. So there went the Magical Empire.
Wow.
And then they closed part of that off, and then they turned the rest of it into a nightclub. So now, and it's been because the nightclub fad was in Vegas, and
right.
I think it's petering out now. But
well, you know, I've heard about nightclubs. What they do is usually whenever that it reaches a peak, that's about the time that they need to close and remodel.
Yep.
You know, because if it starts on the downturn, you know, it dies quickly.
It becomes the not cool thing.
The not cool.
A whiff of normalcy, then we're gone. We're going to go to find the new.
That's
hip
right.
Place.
Got to tear it down and rebuild.
And I hate calling those nightclubs because a real nightclub is, you know, like in the 40s,
sure,
where Marvin Roy and
Cardini.
Alan Wakeling and Cardini and those guys would perform. This is just, and we're going to drink a bottle of vodka and
that's
throw
right.
up on ourselves.
For $200.
That's not a nightclub.
No, not at all. Now, also about Puck, that you and Puck have been best friends for a long time and worked about a half dozen shows a year together and everything. Have you worked cruise ships together with him?
No, we've never done a cruise ship together, but, you know, we've done a couple colleges. We've done some performing arts centers, theaters. And it's basically so we can – it's our way of doing, you know, kind of what Penn and Teller sort of do. We put a little bit of social messaging and consciousness of, you know, in terms of what's going on in society today and using magic to talk about it in kind of a political way where he presents the sides of the left and I present the sides of the right. And by that struggle between the two of us, we actually come to common ground. So that was the whole theme.
Gotcha.
And it's a hard sell because nobody wants to hear from the other side anymore these days, you know, politically. It's everybody's like, you're the enemy. No, you're the enemy.
Yeah, it doesn't matter which side you're on.
It doesn't matter which side
you're
on. That's right. It's all polarized.
Yeah, politically polarized. It's amazing, but sad. And so was he someone that you had known since you were a youth when you were talking about 12 years old?
No. We met when I was in college he was living in the Baltimore area and going to visit Denny's shop. So we just struck a fast friendship because Denny taught both of us. Denny taught Puck through the magic shop when he lived in Baltimore. And then my relationship bloomed with Denny when I was in Baltimore. So naturally we had that Denny connection.
Yeah.
And that's when the two of us got together. And we realized although we came from different neighborhoods, from different areas, we could not be more different. Magic was that thing that held us together, and Denny was the catalyst for that. So and Puck and I work really well together, bouncing ideas off each other.
Much like you and Dan Harlan. I mean, from the standpoint
just like me and Dan. And Puck is like kind of polar opposite from Dan, but you know,
really?
Just in terms of he's so much more laid back, and Dan is very high energy and
that's
intense.
True. I see that.
You know, so but you know, I get along with both of them just because I mean my disposition is I'm pretty mellow. I'm a good listener. I can take in your point of view. I can take in your point.
You're kind of
view.
The centrist.
Yeah, I'm very centrist. I'm very centrist on most issues because I can see both. So that's why I can get along with Denny. And Denny was super right wing. You know, Obama this, Obama that.
Yeah.
And Puck is, oh, I love Obama. I love Obama. So him and Denny went back and forth over that.
And you were kind of in the middle. Hey,
and I'm
guys.
Kind of in the middle. I'm like, okay, I see he kind of screwed that up, but I see he did this kind of well. So I'm pretty even handed when it comes to that kind of stuff. But we all get along, and that's kind of the point of the show. Puck and I do. It's like even though we're different, we can find common ground, and that's what we need to do in society.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, again, on Denny and Lee. Shop that what happened to the stuff that he had? You understand that somebody taking care of or selling his stuff?
Yeah, well, basically, the shop, there was, I think, half of what was in the shop was just crazy garbage, weird stuff.
One-off
and
stuff.
And half of it was just beautiful stuff that So we basically...
And a lot of nice posters, too, in that
And a lot of great posters. Mm-hmm. So everything, Dawn, the daughter, kind of everything that was important and needed to go to different places, Dawn took care of. And like, I'm preserving his magic act, all the stuff he did in the show, his actual props,
right,
that I'm photographing for the book and talking about. And then his personal library, parts of it went to different people who Denny had specified. And so everything was kind of sent out. And then the rest that couldn't really be taken care of was just kind of tossed away into a dumpster in the back. And everybody was told, by the way, it's all being thrown away. So there was a lot of dumpster diving, a lot of dumpster diving going on back there for the other stuff. Mm-hmm. But everything that was important was preserved and the right people got it. So
I, for some reason, was thinking that I had read somewhere that it was going to someone who was going to continue to keep the shop operating.
Yes. And then some of the merchandise with Dawn's blessing, myself, a guy named Cam McMillan and Jesse McCartley have opened a very small little boutique version of the Denny and Lee Magic Studio in York, Pennsylvania.
Oh, a physical brick and mortar.
Brick and mortar shop. Wow. It's very small. It's only 700 square feet.
You say in York?
In York, Pennsylvania. Yep.
So right, while you're there, downtown. You want to go to the Harley-Davidson Museum.
Go to the Harley-Davidson Museum and then go to the new D&L Magic. Magic on the DL, it's called. Gotcha. Denny and Lee, D&L Magic. And it's just going to be a little place. There's a little thing talking about Denny and his legacy and what he wanted Magic to be. It's a brick and mortar shop, which Denny loved. It's a place where people can come and hang out and you can have a cup of coffee and chat about magic and peruse the books. So Dawn gave a lot of the inventory and some of the books and stuff to create that atmosphere. So it's a mini version of what Denny's shop was. We'll never be able to recreate Denny's shop because the shop was Denny.
Yeah. Well, but, of course you had the smell of tobacco.
And you had that.
That's the main
thing. We have a cigar lit there, burning constantly.
Then the pig walking around.
And the pig walking around. Yeah, we can never recreate that.
No, that's for sure.
But yeah, it's just a little place to preserve.
Is it a strip mall or whereabouts?
It's right on Main Street, downtown in York, right around the corner from the York Little Theater.
Okay.
So, and they have partnered up with us to offer the space to use as for shows, for lectures. So hopefully it'll just be this little cool, little vintagey place to hang out in York and do some
shows.
Is it
open like during regular hours or by appointment only?
No, it's open during regular hours. If you go to D&L Magic, .com.
That's with an ampersand.
D&L Magic. We also have a Facebook page. It'll tell you the hours and if you're coming. Now I'm there. I mean, I'm traveling a lot, but I do get up there and hang out, and we're going to be doing a series of little videos and things and talks from the shop. So just to throw out on Facebook and just to keep Denny's messaging going that it's important to read books.
Sure.
Everything's in Tarbell. really, really treat magic and give it the love that it and respect that it deserves before you go out and perform it.
Yeah, it was both Denny and Roger Klaus who I have always given me the best information as far as the recommendation that you should do to make your magic better is read.
Very important, because when you read a book as opposed to watching a DVD, your brain fires in different areas that can bring things out, as opposed to just watching it and you're just completely frontal cortex. This is exactly what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
But you really interpret.
When the first Harry Potter movie had come out, I had heard people complaining a little bit about that from the standpoint that you could no longer use your imagination to envision what the real Harry Potter looked like.
It's all created for
you. From then on, it was...
That's what Snape looks like. That's what Dumbledore looks like.
That's right.
That's why my wife is the most amazing woman. The kids wanted to watch Harry Potter. They were like, we want to watch the Harry Potter movie. And she's like, no, you're going to read the book first. And they do. And then they're like, I imagine this so different.
Exactly.
And then you get that perspective. That's why if you're going to learn a trick, find it in a book first, learn it from the book, and then watch Danny De Ortiz's version of it, on a video.
Right.
So you're not becoming a copy of him. Not to shun videos. They're great.
Sure.
And whenever you're learning something from a video, I would say, and Denny would say this too, do it exactly like the guy does it. Like he wrote it, like he scripted it, because he made those choices for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Once you do that and you master that for a couple of months, then you start to bring your own stuff into it. Don't just change something for the sake of changing it. Learn it the way the guy put it out or the gal wrote it down first. And so you can understand why, and then you bring yourself to it.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
I was just talking with someone recently, and I think it was Bernardo Sedlicek, and he was talking about a friend of his, a Spanish-speaking magician, I can't think. Anyhow, he was working on some sort of a thing. It was a Di Vernon idea, and I've forgotten the trick. It's not important, but the point was that he had reworked this thinking for 4 years, you know, thinking, okay, well, he thought he would refine it by doing this, this, and this. And by continuing to do that, at the end of the 4 years, he had gone all the way back to his Vernon's original thinking. It's like, now I understand.
I remember listening to that. It was the cups and balls.
It was cups and balls. That's right.
Yeah. He went and redid the whole cups and balls, different variations, and showed it to somebody. And they said, oh, that's Vernon.
Yeah.
So we'd gone in a complete circle back to Vernon. Yeah. These people who precede us in putting out these ideas, everything, every choice is made for a reason.
That's right. I will say, on the other hand, there are some things being put out today that are
garbage.
That's right.
Absolutely.
And there's
garbage.
Not a lot of thought put into it other than I want to get some return on my investment.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to make, you know, $2,000 on this thing with a rubber band and a freaking paperclip.
Yeah.
You know, it's terrible. There's not 80% of what's out there is unnecessary. It's unnecessary. There's nothing new. You know, now, instead of doing it with a lighter, you're doing it with a, you know, flash drive or something. I don't know.
When was that? You said just last night, something about that someone had changed something, not going to go into who it was, but they had changed it from a glass.
Somebody changed something. I'm not going to do it with a knife. I'm going to do it with a
broken glass.
Bag of broken glass, or I'm going to do it with this or that. You know, unless it's really method shifting, or you could look at it from a different angle, or something that does, like Vernon said, eliminates an unnecessary move.
Right.
Or improves it in some way, great. But just to change something for the sake of changing it and try to cop a buck off of it, you know, it's like changing. I mentioned in the lecture last night. It's like you don't change the egg from the egg bag to some other object because you miss the whole point of the egg bag. The egg is fragile; it can break. That's part of the drama of the egg bag.
Yeah.
You know, if you turn it to a golf ball, who cares? You're just hiding a ball. But you're manipulating a raw egg. That's incredible.
That's right. So, yeah, if you've already drawn attention to the fact that it's a wooden egg, you know, laid by a decoy, then it makes no sense if you drop it. It's like, okay, who cares?
Who cares? Yeah. Yeah. There's no drama there.
No drama.
But if you drop an egg on it, then you're screwed. The egg's broken. And you're
that's
an
true.
Idiot.
In working with Penguin, do you make some of the decisions as to what things are going to go forward or not? Do they talk to you about this from time to time?
Usually my relationship with Penguin is, and most people, is very casual. You know, it's like, you want to do something? All right. What do you want to do? I got this idea. You know? So they'll say, well, you know, okay, we can't do it this way, or you can't tell that joke, so they'll do that. But no, they've Penguin and Murphy's and all these Bob Kohler, all these people I work with are very open to my ideas, and they kind of rein me in when I get a little crazy.
What I mean is whenever that some Joe Blow has a new card trick because he's got a double backer something, and they bring it to Penguin for possible marketing.
Yeah.
Are you one of the people who looks at that to make a decision of saying, yes, we'll take this or not, or hey, I think it's a good idea?
No, I'm not that deeply
involved
with
Penguin.
That's more or less Dan Harlan and Sean Dunn and those guys.
Okay.
They go, you know, they do a pretty good, some slips through, you know, but they do a pretty good job as gatekeepers on that stuff.
Okay.
Now, Penguin does have that website or the Penguin Partner thing where you can upload whatever the heck you want to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you sell a million of them, great. If you sell three of them, great. They're still going to pay you.
They'll pay you whatever that you get.
$4 on whatever it is. And that's a good way to do it. But
you
got to realize, you know, and the magic is, it's a Persian bazaar, man. Everybody's selling everything.
Everything for sale, that's right.
And half of it came out of Tarbell half of it came out of, you know, a magazine from the 50s that some guy found. I was like, that's a good idea. I'm going to make a buck off of that.
That's right.
I like to look at things and go, okay, this is a trick I really want to do in my show, but this part sucks and I'm going to fix it.
Yeah.
And that's how I attack it. You know, that's why the needles I attacked and I made it so that it's safe. And the Bill and Lemon, I attacked it another way because I wanted the spectator to examine
Brilliant.
The lemon.
Mm-hmm.
And the nail, whether it's the broken bottles or the nail, I wanted to attack it because I didn't want to get hurt. I didn't want to have the possibility of getting a nail through my hand.
Mm-hmm.
So I attacked those things that way to solve problems. I really like solving magical problems.
That was the same thing. I recall Banachek was my business partner and was here in Houston whenever the Penn & Teller had come
to his
house originally. And Randy had told him that he'd been working on this bullet catch.
Mm-hmm.
Long story short was that they said that we, you know, he shared it with them.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, we wouldn't do it anything unless it's 110% safe.
Yep.
And that was what you were saying last night, is stupid. You won't, you never do anything where there is a...
If there's a possibility of danger...
Possible factor, don't do it. Leave
it out. If there's a sharp thing in that bag, chances are you're going to slam your hand down on it eventually one day.
That's right.
You know? And Denny did the bullet catch too for many years.
Did he?
And he did the method very similar to Penn and Teller and explored that method. And I know Penn and Teller saw Denny do the bullet catch and was an influence in their consciousness on doing it. Just like Jeff Hobson seeing Denny do the egg bag
right.
And that was an influence on Jeff Hobson to do the egg bag. I just talked to Jeff the other day, and he was like, yep, that's exactly what happened. listening to an interview with Denny, he told that story, and I was like, I got to call Jeff and check this out. And it was true. Yeah,
sure enough,
absolutely.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, a couple more things just before we close out over here, and that has to do, how long do you think it'll be before your book will come out on Denny?
I'm guessing within the next 2 years.
So
I'm going to try to have it out by the middle of 2020.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it'll be out definitely before FISM.
Yeah.
There we go.
We'll try to shoot for that.
And then finally, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. And I always like to know, what is your philosophy of life? What's important to you?
Oh, yeah. So the word, okay, I'm just going to put it in one word. The
really?
Word is
okay.
Tenacity.
Okay.
Tenacity. Do not give up on whatever you want to do. You might put something down and come back to it later. You know, it took me 6 years to finally do the egg bag to where I was happy with it. I thought it sucked, and I sucked at it for many years, but Denny convinced me to do it. I was told that, you know, Caesar, you're never going to work in Vegas. It's so hard. It's too hard to get in. It's too much competition. I kept up with it, and I got that gig, and I've made it happen.
Right.
And Denny too. Denny was told, you know, your hands are too small. You can't be a manipulator. And there's a great story about him getting into Vietnam. They told him, nah, you can't go to Vietnam because you have a medical thing, and that'll all be in the book. But he was like, screw you. You can't tell me what I can do. And he figured out a way to beat that medical thing and went to Vietnam and did it. So anything you want in life, you have to really pursue, and you have to pursue it with a passion. And so be tenacious about what you do. Learn to take a break and put it down and come back to it. But never, never give up on it. You can always make it happen.
I will recommend people who are listening to this podcast then, based on what you've just said right there, to go back to one I did with Tom Blomquist. And Tom was one of my fraternity brothers and lives out in L.A. and is a screenwriter and has been a producer and director of, like, Walker, Texas Ranger,
yeah.
And the A-Team, and some other things like that. And he says in the podcast that I do not believe that I am a better writer, screenwriter than others. In fact, I've had worked in the writer's room with others in a little bungalow where they are far better than me.
Far better talented.
But he said, I was tenacious. He said, I always kept at it. He said, these other guys, you know, when they got bad news or was rejected, they couldn't stand the rejection. He said, I got rejection after rejection. He said, I just kept at it. And you get better, you know, as you keep after it. Just don't give up on your dream.
And you learn from those mistakes, and you keep heading at it. That's great. And then he achieved what he wanted to do by being tenacious.
Yeah.
It's very important.
Right. Okay. One thing I do want to ask, and then we'll close out for sure.
Okay.
How'd you get Alexander?
That's
got to be a funny story.
We got to cover that. So all throughout my life, my last name is Grocki. It's Polish. If you listen to Bill Malone on one of his DVDs about the Bill and Lemon, he says, yeah, this kid, Scott Grocki, taught me this, and I'm going to teach it to you. He gave me permission to teach it to you.
Yeah.
So Grocki, people called me Scott Crocky, Scott Broccoli, Scott Grokey, Gronky.
You heard it all probably.
I heard it all. And I was like, and I got to Vegas, and then on the marquee, it said, you know, Scott Grocki. And I was like, it just doesn't look right. I don't know. So I met Dan, talked to Dan for a while. And I said, Dan, I want to change my name. And I'm talking to my wife, Jenny. And we're all sitting around talking. Well, what are we going to change it to? So we were like, I don't know. Like, I was going to change my name to Scott Cessna, but I thought that was a little plain. Thank you. Hey. I know. So, well, no, we was Scott Shepherd, Scott Alexander, Alan Scott, Scott Allen, because Alan is my middle name. Anyway, we went through all these names, and I was like, nah, I'm not going to change it. So about a week later, Jenny, my wife, Dan's girlfriend, Jenny, Aaron Fisher, we all went to see Lance Burton's show.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I was excited. I was only in town for about 6 months, and we got comped in. Edelin comped us in to see Lance Burton's show. And I'm like, this is great. I'm in Vegas. I'm working on the strip. My name's on the marquee. It's terrific. Yay, we're all there. And somebody had slipped a note that I was working at Caesars, back to Edelin. So Lance Burton comes out on stage. He's like, ladies and gentlemen, Tonight we have a performer from down the street working at Caesar's Palace, new to Las Vegas. Let's give him a big hand. Scott Crotchy.
Oh, that's a good one. Okay, you just thought you'd heard it all. Crotchy.
And I turned to my wife on my left, and I turned to Dan on my right, and I said, I'm changing it.
Yeah.
And the next day it became Alexander.
That's a good one. That's a good. Yeah. So thank you, Lance.
Thanks, Lance. I've never met Lance face to face, but yeah, that's my
You
story.
Might now after he hears this. I know he listens to the podcast, so he might come to you and say, Scott, I'm glad I had a chance to have you change your name.
Hey, yep. Thank you. Look, the balcony, my people.
That's right.
So great.
It's Love been Lance. Great. Love well, thank Lance. You very much. I appreciate you being my guest.
Thanks for having me, Scott. It's been a
you
blast.
Bet. And so for the Magic Word Podcast, actually, that's for Scott Wells and...
Scott Alexander, and this is Scotty two Scots. Out.
two
Scots in the morning.
Two Scots in the morning. And also then,
Scotty out.
I love it, man. Well, thank you very much, Scott Alexander, for being my guest this week on the Magic Word Podcast. I appreciate you taking out a little bit of time and sharing your thoughts and wisdom with the rest of the listeners here as well. I hope that you guys enjoyed that. And also, I know something else that you're going to enjoy, and that is a set of his lecture notes. If you are interested in getting a free copy of that, all you have to do is to go to themagicwordpodcast.com, and there, this week only, we're going to be offering an opportunity for you to enter the contest and to win a copy of his lecture notes. Now, this is a hard copy, which means that it's not a PDF that I can actually email to you if you are in a foreign country. That means residing outside of the U.S., but if you do, then that's going to be fine, because even if I draw your name, then I will decide, or I'll find out from the post office how much that is going to cost for foreign shipping, and I will let you know, and if you agree to pay the postage, then I will send this. If you reside in the U.S., then postage is absolutely free. Compliments of the Friends of the Magic Word. Who are the Friends of the Magic Word? Well, those are the people who help sponsor this podcast. If you'd like to become one of them, go to themagicwordpodcast.com. And while you're over there entering the contest, just hit that other tab that is saying Become a Friend of the Magic Word. And this way you can find out how that you can give a one-time donation or do a pledge that goes from month to month. It can be a dollar on up, however much that you have available. Just feel like that you're having a cup of coffee with me. If you enjoy these podcasts, please show us a little love and throw a little money our way from time to time. That'd be helpful. I appreciate that. So again, just go to the podcast, enter the contest, and I'll let you know who's going to be the winner in next week's episode. Well, if you hear that music, that means, of course, it's time again for another product review. Typically, we have products that are provided to us by Murphy's Magic Supplies. This week, since we are featuring Scott Alexander, he had provided me with one of the items that he sells on his website that's called a bias pad. So I thought we'd talk a little bit about that and give you my honest review and opinion of how this works for me. First of all, the trick, again, called bias pad, as he says on the trailer, it's a locking add a number pad. So now that you know exactly what it is, that's basically what it is. One of the things I want to say about this right up front is that it is practical, commercial, and works every time, and is something that I have been using, and I wanted to see how this was going to work in real-life situations. I've done it several times. It works like a charm. I do love it, despite some of the drawbacks. Now, these drawbacks, I really believe, are small things that magicians would kind of say this gives them some problems. Specifically, as I said, since this is a locking pad, I will say, obviously, it's locking because of a magnet. Now, when you look at the product to begin with, it is essentially is a post-it note kind of a thing. And that one side that has the magnet on it, from looking at the outside of this, there is a little bit of an indentation of where the magnet is, so that you can do a visual check front and back, and you can see that they are both not exactly similar. similarly. Likewise, once that you open the locking mechanism, that inside there, that the place where the magnet goes is actually a little bit raised. It doesn't fit directly into the gimmick itself, into the hole, and as a result, there's kind of a little raised indentation. So what I have done in order to overcome that is that the post-it notes that you place on top of this piece of plastic that holds the magnet, cut it a hole so this way that it kind of covers that. And I've just put a few pages of the post-it note on there so this way that it's flush. So this way that there's not a bump or any raised surface on that with the post-it notes that go on top of that. Also, I'll say that the piece of plastic in which the magnet is fitting inside there is not exactly the same color as all post-it notes. Of course, post-it notes come in all colors. This is a yellow one. The color of the yellow is just a little bit off color. It's not exactly the same shade of some of the post-it notes that we use here in the U.S. Also, one last thing, whenever that you do close it up, you can hear it kind of give a like that. It kind of gives a snap whenever that it closes up. Now, that could be overcome easily enough whenever that you just place your finger in there whenever that you're closing it and just let it close gently or put it down to your side. If you're using this on stage, which I have been using traditionally for the past several times that I've been using this, you put it to your side and you can close it and no one is paying attention. Again, whenever that you're handing this out for people to write in it, you've already got that side already open to begin with. And whenever I keep this in my and they don't close it, they are just handing it around to a few other people. In my case, I do have them add numbers for the effect that I do with this. And I have this in my side case with it already open with a Sharpie marker that's keeping it open. So I don't have to be fumbling with it whenever I pick it up and try to put my thumbnail in there or whatever in order to open it, because it is a very strong magnet. So in other words, I've got the pin that kind of keeps that open. So as I reach for it, then it's already open. I flip it open with my thumb. It's easy. And then I have some lines drawn where they will be placing the numbers. And it is, again, there are some minor things in there that may cause you a little bit of heartache when you first see it. I mean, particularly when you're looking at the $99.95 price tag that's on this. It is relatively steep, but and so you might think, well, it should be better made for that kind of money that you're paying for that. But again, from the commercial standpoint and for a working pro, I have not had any difficulty with that. People are not looking at that. Again, whenever that you are calling attention to other kinds of things that are happening in the context of your show, they're not looking at the prop that you're using, basically. It's nothing more than basically a nice little leather pad that's holding the post-it notes that are inside there. And if you treat it as nothing more than what it should be, then they're really not drawing attention to that. My friend Jamie Salinas had a little idea that he had actually printed out a little sticker that says Post-It, has the logo on there, that he would put on both sides of the bias pad. So this way that it covers that place where the magnet would be. So it looks the same from one side or the other, you know, basically. You can fiddle around with that however that you want, but I don't think that that's necessary. It works well, even though it doesn't look perfect. For the price that you might be paying, you might expect something a little bit more, but I'm satisfied with it. I would recommend it. This is a nice little product. I'm not saying that just because that I've just had him on my podcast. I think it's something that a pro would use. I certainly am. I was using Banachek's SciCalc, and it is good also, but it's getting so that fewer and fewer people want to, I guess they question a calculator in the context of a show, because you have a calculator on your phone. And that's what's beautiful about this from the standpoint that once that I would hand this out and they write some numbers and then the last person checks that, they use the calculator on their phone to make sure that all the numbers add up. So at least that's the way I use it. There are several routines that come with this that Scott Alexander and others have offered that you might want to put into your show then as well. So overall, I would say this the bias pad is something I recommend. I would have some reservations only because of the small details that you may have a problem with. Personally, I don't. I did at first and kind of looking at it, but I thought, okay, I'm going to try this out. Never had a problem. Used it a half dozen times already just in the past 2 weeks and have not had any issue. It is perfectly organic. Looks great. It's a nice leather pad, well made. So I would recommend it. Again, called the Bias Pad by Scott Alexander. So So I think that's going to be a wrap for this week. And I want to thank you again for tuning in. And until next week, well, during that time, you've got plenty of time to go out on your social media and to share this podcast. If you like it, share it with others. And also like our Facebook page, the Magic Word Podcast. Also, Magic Word Pod on Twitter and Scott Wells Magic on Instagram. Follow us however you can. Appreciate it. And then share it as you will. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and whatever you do, do it with a passion. Be tenacious and never give up if you believe in what you're doing. This is Scotty out.